This week, in the wake of a big scandal over lifetime memberships being revoked at a campground, is it safe to get lifetime memberships? Is it something you should consider at all? Plus, we may be in for a difficult Thanksgiving travel season, thanks to some issues with airlines. Plus, the National Weather Service has released their seasonal outlook for the winter. Where's it going to be safe to camp this winter? All that and more. This is RV Miles. Chances are you've seen them on the road. That's because Blue Ox designs and manufactures the best towing products in the industry. Just look around. You'll find them on highways and campgrounds and anywhere you find people traveling in the great outdoors. From award-winning tow bars and base plates to a full line of weight distribution hitches, adjustable ball mounts, and now they have fifth wheel hitches too. With Blue Ox, towing doesn't have to be a drag. Visit blueox.com for more information. More in a moment, but first, this episode is sponsored by Lectric e-bikes. The Lectric XP4 builds on the versatile, high-performing, and award-winning design of the XP model. Beloved by more than 400,000 riders, the XP4 carries on the tradition of the ultimate utility bike, built with an abundance of upgrades to the undisputed industry standard for foldable electric bikes. The XP4 includes a fully redesigned frame, new colors, a full-color display, hydraulic brakes, and an 8-speed drivetrain, in addition to a new option for an upgraded, more powerful 750-watt motor and longer-range battery. The Lectric e-bikes XP4 still starts at $999, the same price it's always been, and the holiday season is the perfect time to buy because beginning in November, Lectric is throwing in a ton of free accessories with each bike purchase. Head over to Lectric e-bikes, that's L-E-C-T-R-I-C, ebikes.com for more information. Welcome to episode number 385 of RV Miles. I'm Jason.
And I'm Abby. And we are two RVers who, along with our three boys, have been crisscrossing all over North America on one epic road trip since 2016. Here at RV Miles, we talk all things RV and outdoors, from industry news to national parks, travel destinations, and so much more.
A little bit different recording environment today. First of all, you're watching this. We have our new desk is complete. Can't entirely see the whole thing on camera. You just see the top of it a little bit, but it's lit up, which is nice on top. It helps us with that sort of like under eye glow, get rid of some of the wrinkles and things like that. But I just think it looks kind of cool too. So we've got the mics in a different position because of it. It was a whole to do. Plus it's nighttime and we never record at nighttime.
No, it's night. It's Saturday night. And this feels like the topics that we're doing today, this is sort of like a news, our version of the news roundup, things that we can talk about that have been happening in and around the RV and camping world, and we can expand on them a little bit. So it feels a little bit like we're doing the,
like the Sunday evening news.
Right. Yeah. Like, are we 60 Minutes?
This is Dateline.
If this was Dateline, it would be some sort of like true crime. We're not doing true crime here on RV Miles, but it does feel, it is so pop. I am not into it. I have never listened to a true crime podcast or watched a true crime documentary, but they are where the money is at.
Oh, I remember my mom used to like only watch Unsolved Mysteries. Like she went through a period of like lots of Unsolved Mysteries.
That man gave trench coats a life. But I didn't watch anything like that really either. And I wasn't really into like Matlock or.
Oh, see, that's a whole different thing. Courtroom drama.
Courtroom drama.
I was way into that.
I totally believe that about you. I can see that. I was never a big like Law and Order the fact that Law and Order, they almost are like the original true crime show.
They are.
I mean, in the sense of like they had to walk so that true crime podcast could run and they're still walking. I can't believe how long that show has been on. But anyway, we're way off topic, as we like to do at the beginning of this episode. But we're a little thrown off because we took Friday off to drive our oldest to Chicago because he was premiering a short film in a film festival that he had been accepted into in Chicago. And the film festival was yesterday, Friday. And we're going to talk all about that experience. We won't do it here. We're going to talk about it on Detour in our 24 hours in Chicago, which included one of the best tarts I've ever had. And I am talking about a pastry, and it was unbelievable. And I'm very sad that I can't ever have it again until I get back up to Chicago. But we're going to talk all about Jack's Film Festival and everything over on Detour. But today, Jason wants to talk news because Jason doesn't talk enough news. Yeah. So he wants to talk news here on this episode today.
Yeah, we've got three topics that we want to just sort of take a closer look at. And we want to start doing some more of this on the podcast. You might have noticed we already have been doing more of this. You know, I do these news roundups every week, and they're about 10 minutes long, and I've got enough time to spend a minute or two on each story. And I'm not really putting my opinion on it or anything like that. And I know a lot of the comments that people want to hear more about what we think about those stories. So we want to spend some more time on the podcast, diving a little bit deeper into those stories and talking about, you know, our opinions on them or what they may mean to RVers and campers.
Just the bigger overall picture. And this way I get to share with all of you what it's like to absorb Jason's opinions on
Yeah, like you don't have any. First up, though, we wanted to talk a bit about Thanksgiving travel, because as you may have heard just over the last couple days, the FAA is starting to require airlines to cancel some flights because of the ongoing shutdown. So, you know, there's air traffic controllers are starting to call in sick because that's what they do during a shutdown when they don't get paid eventually. You know, they just don't want to work, and I don't blame them.
How dare you? It is the season where people get sick. Sure. So they are sick and they need to stay home. So the thing is about 40 cities, I believe, is what it is as of Friday yesterday, and 4%. And that's going to go up should the shutdown continue. That will go up a week from then to 10%.
Yeah.
So we were talking about that, and we were talking about some other things on the drive yesterday. And I kind of mused, I wonder what this is going to do to car travel for Thanksgiving. So we're coming up on a busy travel season. And I'm wondering, and my kind of thought with all of this, and that's why this is being talked about, was given that this is around the time that people are starting to or have already booked their airline, we're getting into that. How hesitant are you on what is historically the biggest travel day of the year for the airlines, that week of Thanksgiving? How hesitant will people be now to want to fly, even if the shutdown
could end
tomorrow?
Yeah, right. Have already made the decision because of difficulties with this to be like, well, we'll just drive. If it was on the fence, for instance, maybe they were sort of an 8-hour drive away from their destination and they're back and forth between flying and this has made the decision for them. A lot of people are not going to change their minds, but there's certainly probably going to be some sort of uptick, which will get worse if the shutdown continues.
Yeah, my thought was, if this was me and I was in the situation where I was looking at flying for Thanksgiving and I'm starting to hear all of the chatter that's coming out, right now it's been, I believe, a lot of like in and out of the country flights that are being impacted and canceled. But of course, if that number ticks up and they have to start getting into the 10% range, we're going to start looking at some domestic flights that are going to be impacted. And I thought, you know, even if I was a 12-hour drive from my destination, I would still get up at 5 a.m. and get on the road before heading to the airport.
Yeah, you might have your tickets already and everything, but you don't want to risk the chance of your flight being canceled and entirely missing your family Thanksgiving, right? Going to be some people that are going to make that cancellation, and you know that ticket is going to get more and more expensive, because if there's less flights, those tickets are just going to get more and more expensive as well.
And I think for some people, and I know that we have this option when we book flights, that even if we were to cancel it, we would just get a credit for the ticket. We would know that we would have it to use at another time. So, you know, you could have that option where you're like, look, I might not be getting the money back, but I'm not losing the ticket. I'm just going to roll it over into a future trip, even if that is next Thanksgiving or whatever. But I do think for RVers, if you're going to be traveling this in and around the Thanksgiving holiday, I think you're probably going to see an increase in traffic that week. And even for some people, they may even opt to take the RV instead.
Sure. So this is around the time of year where I usually would share on the news. AAA usually does a Thanksgiving travel outlook. And I usually do this before other holiday weekends as well. I share whatever AAA has put out. They do a really deep study with a third party provider about traffic data from last year and what they expect from this year. And it's usually fairly accurate. They go back and they give sort of updates on it, on how accurate it was. And it's usually pretty accurate. It isn't out for this year yet. I can't imagine that they wouldn't be taking some of this into consideration. Yeah. So as soon as that's out, I will share it. But they'll tell you which days are going to be the busiest on American roads. And usually that's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, and then over the weekend as people return home. But with Wednesday usually being the busiest day on U.S. roads. So if you are considering particularly driving out of a big city or through a big city, that is something to really be paying attention to as you consider your travel plans for this upcoming Thanksgiving travel weekend.
I actually am really excited now that we're hosting and we are not leaving at all this year. Normally we travel around this time and we are staying put and we are having people come to our house.
We usually, if we're driving somewhere, if we're driving to Kansas City before a holiday is often what we're doing. And often that involves a drive across I-80 that gets really, really busy across Iowa. And it can be frustrating, but I somewhat kind of enjoy the camaraderie of everybody on the road kind of having the same mindset. They're doing the same thing. And, you know, you stop at a gas station or a rest stop or whatever, everybody's just kind of like in a going to see the rest of the family mood. Maybe that's not a good thing for everybody, but it is for us.
It is for us. So if you're out and you notice an increase, what do we say? We just pack our patient's pants. Is that like
our patient's pants
and just, you know that it might be a little bit crowded, but enjoy the festivities and the fact that everyone has a destination to get to and to celebrate with those that they love. So it'll be interesting to see the roads this Thanksgiving.
More in a moment, but first, this episode is sponsored by eTrailer. Ever feel like finding the right RV part is like searching for a needle in a haystack? Enter eTrailer.com. Whether you're puzzled about which product is right for you or how to install it, eTrailer has got you covered. Their U.S.-based customer service is available by chat or phone 7 days a week, and with expert Q&As, helpful articles, and tons of reviews and install videos, you'll tackle any RV problem with confidence. eTrailer strives to get their hands on everything they sell, and their website is full of overviews, reviews, buying guides, and tutorials. And it's not just RV parts, it's towing and vehicle accessories, camping supplies, and more. Head to the link in the description and get free shipping on orders over $99. Harvest Host is a membership that allows RVers to take a rest from the road and enjoy unlimited overnight stays at over 5,000 unique locations in North America, like breweries, farms, attractions, wineries, and much more. Easily plan and book your next RV trip and enjoy over $1,500 in exclusive member benefits by joining Harvest Hosts. Get 15% off your first year of membership with the code MILES. That's M-I-L-E-S. Go to harvesthost.com to become a Harvest Host member today. So also in the past week, the National Weather Service, which is, you know, a division of NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Oceanic or oceanic?
However you want to say it. Oceanic.
Like an ocean, right?
Yeah.
Okay, National Oceanic.
Sometimes words are hard. They put out their seasonal weather outlook. And this is a thing that can be, you know, obviously predicting weather isn't the most exact science in the world.
No, tell me more, please.
The further out you get, the more and more difficult it is to predict. And it used to be, you'd open up the Farmer's Almanac and they'd have their predictions. And we just found out the Farmer's Almanac, or there's two farmers. There's the Farmer's Almanac and there's the Old Farmer's Almanac. I'm not sure which is the one.
Farmer's Almanac.
Okay.
That's been around since 1818.
Its last production is going to be
next year. 2026.
Yeah. But they make up what they put in there for weather predictions.
How dare you?
I used to love almanacs, though. Not like that you kind of almanac, but like how many people live where type almanac, the world almanac.
Well, some people like farmers almanacs. Anyway, they're not going to get them.
The NOAA prediction for December, January, February is out. So most of the winter. And they're expecting in the seasonal temperature outlook, the northwestern states, including the Dakotas and including Minnesota and a little bit of Iowa, are going to have below average seasonal temperatures.
What part of Iowa?
Not us. Just we barely missed the little zone here. But again, the accuracy of this, you know, take it with a grain of salt. And then most of the East Coast, the South and the Southwest should expect above average temperatures.
Which is great news for snowbirds.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you want to see. That's, I can get in the pool. I can go to the beach weather.
And those of us in the Midwest and sort of that swath that goes through the middle of the mountain states on over to Oregon will have sort of equal chances of higher or lower temperatures. So we're kind of right in the middle, basically expect kind of normal. And then when it comes to precipitation.
Snow.
Which would be snow for sure, or rain when it's not
snow.
When it's not when it's not cold enough. The Midwest and the Northwest should have an above average expectation of higher seasonal precipitation.
Snow.
And then in the Southeast and the Southwest below, and then sort of through the plains and New England. And over onto Nevada and Northern California should have equal chances of even precipitation. So
good thing there's not a test that was a lot of information the winter.
I will put the maps on the screen. This is like, they do go back and test this stuff too, just like we were talking about with the traffic. So if you're wondering how accurate this is, so what they say is that they go back and look and, about 80% of the years, it's slightly better. It's at least slightly better than just a random guess. There's some forecasting positivity, some direction going into this. But again, it's long distance weather forecasting. You can really only expect accurate weather forecasting up to like 5 days.
You start at the top and you say it's going to be real cold. Then you get to the middle and you say it's going to be cold. And then you get to the lower part of the country and you say it's going to be cold-ish. And then you say, and then on the sides, the bookends, we can't predict what y'all are going to do. You're just going to do your own things. And some of you are going to have insane snowstorms. And then some of you are, for all we know, it could be tropical weather. We don't know. We just don't know. That, I think, is the kind of weather person I would be. And leave it open-ended and just say, it's going to be winter. And wherever you are, that's going to mean something different to you than it means to other people. So
the other big story that we wanted to talk about this week is sort of leaving a larger block of time for this because this has got a lot of people riled up and rightly so.
Right, because you don't want to talk about the weather for like another 20 minutes. Like we're supposed to care a lot about weather, birds. And whether or not someone's parked in front of our house. Those are the three things that we're required to care about now.
Well, now we're going to care about people taking our money. So I'm just going to read a little bit from this article here. For more than a decade, hundreds of families thought they'd secured a slice of paradise in Pennsylvania's Laurel Highlands, a wooded 100-acre campground where summer never comes to an end. Many had paid $10,000 or more for what they were told were lifetime memberships at the Roaring Run RV Resort near Pittsburgh, a one-time payment that would let them park their campers year after year, no renewal required. Then one email changed everything. The trouble began when longtime owner Jay Coral sold Roaring Run Resort earlier this year to Tannery LLC, a Texas-based company that paid about $2.5 million for the property. Before the sale closed, campers say Coral personally assured them that their contracts would transfer. But soon after the new owners took over, more than 700 families received an email with a different message entirely. Their memberships were null and void, and they would have to pay either weekly rates, monthly rates, or seasonal rates to continue to be able to camp at this campground.
Ah, yes. The personal reassurance helps me sleep night.
There are a few articles that were written about this, and I picked this one in particular because this is from MoneyWise, and they really get into the nitty-gritty of this, and they talk with sort of legal experts about the legality of how all this works. And if that's, and of course it's always going to come down to how the contract is,
okay,
is written.
Right? So yeah, I have questions because I've not read that article. Yeah. So I'm going to fire off my questions and then I'm going to need you and MoneyWise to answer them. Okay. So my first one is the contract. Yeah. So in the contract that everyone signed, was there teeny tiny little print that you needed a magnifying glass to read that said, we can terminate this contract at any time without any warning?
No, but the issue is who you sign the contract with, unfortunately. So you're signing a contract with the business. Mm-hmm. That business is ceasing, essentially.
Right.
And a new business is coming in.
Okay.
So you might look at it as, well, it's the same campground, but actually it's a new business. So your contract was with that business that you had a relationship with. And we got lots of comments. This was one of the topics on last week's news video about people who have had similar experiences with like lifetime fitness memberships, where they paid for a lifetime membership at a gym and that gym got sold to another brand and they were out of luck.
Yeah. Then Purple Gym became Orange Gym. And suddenly, so here's my next question then. Was his name Tanner?
Tanner is the company that bought it. Okay. Tanner LLC. Coral is the guy's last name.
Why didn't Coral ensure in the sale of said campground to Tanner that on the condition that I will sell this to you, or I am selling this to you on the condition that all of these 700 people retain?
Exactly. And I think that's what they thought was happening. I think that's what he assured them was happening, is that he had made that provision.
But he had to have signed something. Did the man not have a lawyer said contract?
We don't know. There's certainly going to be
some
lawsuits over this, because we're talking about big amounts of money. You know, I have lifetime memberships for certain things. Like there's a couple like computer programs that I have a lifetime membership for that was maybe, $250 or something like that. And that you pay with the expectation was like, oh, well, I would have spent that for 3 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it doesn't really matter in the end if this company gets sold 10 years from now, something like that. When you're talking about spending $10,000 plus.
Yeah. I mean, this is sort of like saying, you can put it in another way. So you've talked about the gym, but let's take Disney's Vacation Club, for instance.
Any timeshares.
Any timeshares. Yeah. I don't know much about timeshares outside of DVC. So that's all I have a reference on. But let's say you that's tens of thousands of dollars to enter into that timeshare. Let's say for some weird reason, it becomes, MVC and the Michelson Vacation Club buys it off Disney.
But that's the thing that for as difficult and as problematic as timeshares have been over the years, they are better now because lots of states have put in laws.
Yeah.
But a timeshare, you are an incremental owner of that property. You own part of that property. Mm-hmm. And this is something that a lot of the people in the comments talked about too, is like there are also places where people have bought a site at a campground and they own a site at a campground. And sometimes that involves a legal real estate transaction deeding you that lot, right?
Yes.
You hold the deed to that lot. Sometimes it involves like a 99-year lease. And that is where problems could arise in this, in a very similar fashion in the future if this campground sells off, goes bankrupt, anything of that nature, loses its license to exist, all that sort of stuff could happen. And I think there are problems there when we talk about large amounts of money like this. Obviously, the big one that we know a ton of RVers are involved with, we don't have any experience with it. We've mm-hmm. never used it, but Thousand Trails is a similar system where they have, it's a membership where there's campgrounds across the country where you either pay a lifetime fee. And then you have like sort of, I think, maintenance fees in the future going forward, or you can pay like an annual fee, and the different levels of membership get different levels of access in terms of like how early out you can book. And we have heard from people about how that membership has changed a little bit over the years, that maybe some of those campgrounds have fewer sites dedicated to Thousand Trails members, stuff like that. There, you know, there might be too many memberships being sold, that sort of stuff. And I think this lifetime membership stuff can sound really nice, and it can sound like a really great money-saving opportunity, but you're really opening up yourself to a possibility of getting burned big time. If Thousand Trails goes bankrupt, I don't know what happens.
Well, they go bankrupt, yeah. And I doubt anyone gets their money back. Like, that's generally what happens with bankruptcy. I mean, so the question is, and again, the flip side to Thousand Trails, though, is that we've heard people have wonderful experiences there, and they absolutely love it. And
there are so many full-timers that say they could never have afforded to go full-time without, you know, they're spending $4 a night to camp.
And there's so many people who have a similar situation to the folks in the suburbs of Pittsburgh with their deeded lot, or it's not even deeded, I guess it's just their membership into this campground, who have incredible experiences like that. And it really, really works well for them. And I think some of it has to come down to, because we have recently been looking at potentially purchasing a spot somewhere in the country. And I know that a lot of other RVers have recently done that as well. And there's a lot of videos out there about doing something like that. And I really do think it has to come down to, again, remembering, much like a campground in general, they are not all created equal. And you really need to be mindful of the amount, not only the amount of money you're going to put in. So $10,000 is a lot of money. So you need to weigh that up against, okay, well, how much does it cost for me every year to camp here? Like, let's say I wanted to do 3 or 4 months out of the year. What would be my monthly to do something like that? Then you have to weigh it up against, how often will I want to travel somewhere else and actually take my RV out on the road? So how many weeks out of the year might I be going to different destinations across the country? And then what is that cost? Then you have to, you know, you weigh it up against all of those things. You factor that in. And then you do have to kind of say to yourself, like, am I thinking I'm going to be an RVer for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years? Do I live here in the Pittsburgh area permanently? I mean, there's so much. And this is not to knock the people that paid this. This is more of a bigger conversation about when you get into something like this, because it does seem like, wow, how great would that be to have my own spot and to always know, especially when the constant conversation I hear is how busy campgrounds are, right? And that takes all of the stress of that off, which in a way is a little bit predatory, because campgrounds are busy, but it's not impossible to get a campground. So that language can be a little predatory, I think, sometimes for some people when they're anxious about, like, I just bought this and I don't know where I'm going to camp. And so I think you have to weigh that, all of those options first before making such a big investment. I mean, you've made the investment in the rig and you do, it's sort of like saying, am I 3 or 4, 5 years from now, am I going to want to continue going back to this place?
Yeah. And unfortunately for a lot of people, I would imagine that it's people that can't afford much more than this. So
maybe it's
people that go, they go boondock and quartzite for the winter but they're from Pittsburgh and they come back and spend the summer in Pittsburgh, and maybe they don't have a lot of money. And this is where they plan to live, to be near their family.
Yeah. And I think that all of that is really great. Like, again, I have zero issue with anyone who's like, I just want to get this. I just want to have this one lot, be that I'm going to buy this RV lot or I'm going to have this membership. And this is just where I want to go. I'm just looking to be able to get away a couple of times. No, the weekends.
The issue is whether it's predatory or not, and whether that business is going to stand behind you. And obviously, this is a really kind of specific situation.
Yeah.
But there needs to be some way of, like, there's restitution if this place sells.
Well, I think that that's maybe the bigger point for anyone that's considering something like this going forward is, maybe that's a question none of us would have thought to ask, but now we need to ask it. And now it needs to be a part of that conversation with the campground or with the owner. Like, what happens if you sell, or what happens down the line if you go under, or, these things that, like, will I still have a site?
Well, and as a lot of people pointed out in the comments, that they've learned that lifetime membership means lifetime of the business, which of course, yes. But then also you have to consider, like, what's the lifetime of this business going to be? Because does this sound like a terrible business model? When you have a business model where all the people that are staying at this campground paid once, and what happens when that owner, 10 years later,
700 people paid $10,000
or some more, some less. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to figure that there is probably a little rollover. I'm sure, inventory turns over a little bit from time to time. Maybe people move on, move away, pass away, decide they don't want to be RVers anymore. Right. Some people buy into it and then they have to walk away. And I'm sure that it's not just like, I sold these 700 and I'm never going to see an income again for the next 10 years.
My point, though, being that there's just no cash flow, or there's a much reduced cash flow for that business.
Yes.
And you have to understand that if that business is not operating in a sense, it very well could have been, hey, we put all this money in a bank and we're running off on the interest of it. And then, we're investing a lot of this money and their investments went down or whatever. Because there's a million different reasons this could have been.
So I've been doing the math in my head. So 700 memberships at 10,000 is $7 million.
Yeah.
I would be curious as to how much of that was left for
how much
the
of that,
owners yeah. when they sold that, how much was being put back into the campground. That's a lot of money. And I don't know how long they've been offering these. Is this like, they've had these memberships for 10 years or 20 years? I don't know any of that information.
A lot of people have, fifth wheels. They don't even have a truck. And they're trying to figure out moving their RVs off of these lots.
So they're even allowed to leave them when the campground closes. So then it becomes storage for them too, which is quite appealing because now you have not only a place to go to during the season of the campground, but then you also have the investment of, I just leave it here and it's stored and I'll close it down and then I'll come back at the beginning of the season. But again, it could be like, this is a year round campground and the article doesn't really say, like, do they get, there's so many questions and, we don't have all of the answers to them. And this was really meant just to be like a bigger conversation about memberships, because they have become really popular. I mean, after the pandemic and during the pandemic, I would say we really started to see a boom in owning your own RV site. We saw it started to see a lot of lands pop up where you could buy the RV site, you could develop it out. And that became really popular. And then, you know, Thousand Trails has been around for forever. I think it's just, it's tough because there's so many pluses and minuses. And but I think the biggest one is you just, you are kind of rolling the dice with your money a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like there's this weird thing too, where we have, like, you can pay, you know, $35 and get a KOA membership that gives you 10% off. Mm-hmm. Or you pay, you know, $16,000 or whatever it is to get a Thousand Trails of, like, the full Thousand Trails membership. Mm-hmm. And then your camping is free. And there's, like, where's the in-between? Right. Like, I feel like there needs to be, and a Thousand Trails does have a few of that. They have, like, the $500 regional pass and stuff like that. And there are other companies like Coast to Coast out there as well. And
yeah, I think Passport America, they, you know, you can.
Yeah. And those are kind of discount clubs, if that makes sense. But I feel like, oh, if there was something that cost me, you know, if say somebody like Sun Outdoors, who has a lot of campgrounds across mm-hmm. the country, if they had like a $1,500 a year membership that got me an extreme discount or something like that for a lot of camping, I could see something like that. But yeah, there's just some weird schemes out there that tend to, you know, not benefit the consumer. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah. And the other unfortunate part of this is it does take sometimes something as awful as this, where people are clearly out money that they invested into and had an expectation that they would have this space to kind of shed light on that. And so I know for us, as we continue our personal conversation about maybe buying a lot, a campsite that we would have to go to regularly, I think there's going to be a lot of things for us that we're going to have to really consider after this story has come out, like really making sure that, you know, our investment is protected.
Yeah.
Our money is protected.
That's something I've really looked into a lot about. Like, we've talked about buying land. We've looked at buying at a resort somewhere. Buying land, there are challenges of, like, are you allowed to park an RV on that land and camp mm-hmm. on that land? And even if you are, does the zoning regulation change in the future? And that could be a problem.
So these are just some thoughts that we've been having as this story has been kind of swirling and developing. And I'm sure we're going to learn a lot more, especially as the inevitable happens, which is the lawsuits that are going to start to roll out. And it'll be really curious to see the new company that owns this campground, like, how much responsibility is going to get placed upon them up against how much is going to be placed on the former owner, how much money was still left with the former owner from the campground, you know, what they paid him to buy that campground. If
you're looking for the safest way to do something like this, the safest way is probably to have a traditional seasonal membership, buy a seasonal membership at a campground where you spend whatever it is, $3,000, and you're allowed to camp there while that campground is open through the course of this season. That's probably going to be the safest way to go. It might be a financially similar way to go. If a campground charges $2,500 a season, and maybe they would have done a $10,000 lifetime membership, so that's equivalent to 4 years or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe you would have been better off spending $2,500 and then investing that other $7,500 in, you know, in mutual funds in the market or whatever you invest in.
Well, I don't know about that right now.
In a retirement account. And then,
unless you're going to buy AI, paying
yearly.
I think that that's probably what I would prefer to do, because I don't think I'm. I think for me, it would be a season that I would like to do that. A season I would be interested in just having one place, because if I'm going to put that money, don't ask me to go somewhere else. We're only going to that campground.
Exactly.
Like, not planning. We're not having no 8 week spring fling out in the West. Not happening. Like, we're just going to that campground. So I may not, you know, we may not want to do that the following season. And then at least we've paid what would be the equivalent if we had been doing all kind of traveling, probably saving money because we wouldn't have as big a diesel cost. And then the next year we can reevaluate if we want to renew that membership or we want to go on. And I, you know, for me, I think you should maybe one of the, and I know we need to move on from this, but maybe one of the answers too with these lifetime things is people should be able to take that lifetime option, but it still is renewing yearly. So it's not just all the money up front. Now, I know that probably doesn't sound appealing to the business, but let's say I'm buying a lifetime option for $10,000, but yeah. I'm going to finance it out over the next, you know, 3 or 4 years, 5 years, whatever. I'm going to pay X amount of money every year, but I'm going to pay a little extra on top of that to space that out. And then maybe it's a little bit more of your money is being protected in the investment, because then if something like this, you know, happens, tragically happens, then you have only paid out so much. But also if it gets past the point where you're done paying that and you've paid your 10,000 and they go, you know, and that took 5 years to do that. And then like year seven, this happens. Well, at least yeah. you got those seven seasons, yeah. right?
I think there could also be, you know, if a business wants to do something like this, there could be some sort of insurance policy that, you know, that it is bought with part of the money that pays out if this
it's a good ends, idea.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
There's also an argument that perhaps, you know, whatever the laws of the state are, that there's this could be an illegal timeshare.
This is in a way because story.
Once you get into sort of housing laws, things get a little bit different than gym memberships, right?
Sure.
So there's going to be more to come on this for sure.
Yeah. So, but we would love to hear what you think about this and what we've been talking about. And, you know, do you, not necessarily you don't have to agree or disagree, but, you know, what do you take away from all of this? And if you have bought into something like this, or you are an owner that you have bought a campsite or, you know, some land somewhere, what was your experience? Or if you're out there pricing right now and you're looking around, what has been your experience with how comfortable do you feel and how confident do you feel that that is something you could invest in and have for years and years to come? So we would love to hear everyone's experience because, again, we're a little relatively new to this process. We've only started kind of investigating the ins and outs of this over the last like few months. I don't know that it's anything that we're going to make a decision on anytime soon, but we are starting to talk about it. So it would be great to hear from others who have done this before and what you think of what's going on in Absolutely. Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
All right. It is time to check the level of our tanks. And that is sponsored by our friends over at Liquefied RV Toilet Treatment, the no BS toilet treatment. You can find them over at liquefiedrv.com. Okay, Jay, what is in your black tank this week?
Norcold. Norcold's manufacturer of primarily refrigerators, RV refrigerators. They were one of the biggest brands, particularly back when we all had propane and propane electric or three-way fridges. Mm-hmm. They're going bankrupt.
Rut-row.
Yeah, they're in the middle of bankruptcy proceedings. And, you know, I think a lot of that probably has to do with the fact that we've moved to a lot of DC refrigerators now.
I was about to say, is this the result of no more propane fridges?
Perhaps. Mm. They're going to end up owned by Dave Carter and Associates. So they're not going to disappear entirely, but they're mainly going to exist from this article I read in RV Pro, to do warranty work and parts. And Dave Carter and Associates is sort of a really big firm that has warehouses across the country that they'll supply RV manufacturers and dealerships with parts from, you know, everything from outlets and stuff from all different manufacturers all over the world. They're one of the companies that brings together a bunch of that stuff and warehouses it and delivers it to manufacturers. So they're going to be owned when this is all said and done by Dave Carter and Associates. So I think that's interesting that's happening right now. And, you know, we haven't seen what we kind of expected over the course of this real big downturn. And it's been a serious downturn in the RV industry over the last 2.5 years now. We kind of expected to see a little bit more of what happened back in the, you know, 2008, 2009 crash, where there were just several brands that disappeared or were bought out by other manufacturers. And that's why some of the big conglomerate manufacturers have so many brands now. A lot of it happened back then. And we haven't really seen much in terms of really, really difficult bankruptcies and companies closing and stuff like that. There's been a little bit of it.
The Heartland thing is about as close as I think we've gotten to recently with them sort of being, you know, absorbed into
Jayco. Into Jayco, yeah. And I think that was really just more of a consolidation decision made by Thor. And but we really haven't seen some of the smaller brands being picked up by, we actually saw more acquisitions of brands prior to the pandemic.
So I have a question about
the boom.
The boom. Yeah. I have a question about the Heartland thing. This is going off topic for a second. Is Heartland, and I'm struggling to remember, and this is just my brain these days. I cannot remember past like what happened last week. Is the Heartland brand not being made anymore?
It is.
Heartland
is being manufactured by Jayco.
I saw what prompted this was I saw an ad from Heartland like last week that was, you know, we're getting back to our roots, building the quality and the, you know, it was very, you know, and I think it was like a family running through a field or something. And I was kind of like, it was like, what's going on here?
And Heartland, you know, they used to be, you know, many years ago, they were one of the biggest brands, one of the biggest independent brands. Thor's owned them for, I think since that 2008, 2009.
The boom.
The Heartland, if you're unfamiliar with what's going on, Heartland laid off a bunch of executives. Some of them went to go start Axiom RV, and they have shuttered a bunch of plants, and they moved manufacturing underneath the Jayco umbrella, and also their management under the Jayco umbrella. I think part of that is just Thor as a big umbrella company that has brands like Heartland, Jayco, Keystone, Airstream. I think part of that was their way of saying, okay, the industry, you know, we're going to be putting out a lot less product as this industry is retracting. So let's take the brand that is doing the poorest right now and let's shrink what they're doing and fix what they're doing by moving them under Jayco. Because Jayco has been fairly successful navigating this time, and I think that was kind of probably the smart decision to make. Heartland also was suffering from not having a great reputation either, and that was really starting to hurt them. And so at the Hershey RV show was kind of the reintroduction of Heartland as a Jayco line now, and it'll be interesting to see over the next couple of years, you know, what the changes in quality and the changes in product that gets put out happen to be. But they have shrunk the portfolio of Heartland products. They haven't just taken everything that Heartland was making and put it under Jayco. Yeah. They've also shrunk it down significantly.
Well, that was a great conversation about Norcold. thank you. All right. So what is in your fresh tank this week?
My fresh tank is two other RV manufacturers, Grand Design and Alliance, are both offering right now rebates, manufacturer rebates through the end of the year. This is something I have rarely seen in my time covering this industry. Perhaps it's happened, you know, more at the dealership level. There certainly have been rebates before, but this is the first time I've really seen like press releases go out and website banners being put up and like the idea being, you know, please come buy some product before the end of the year here.
Please buy our stock.
Now it's interesting. They're doing it in different ways too. So Alliance is doing it across the board with all their products. Grand Design, it's only for 2024, and there are still 2024 units on lots and 2025 units that are on lot. So Grand Design, it seems to be looking at this more of a way to help dealers clear out aging inventory.
Yeah, they need to move some product.
So clearly, it's an additional over whatever deal you can get. It depends on the brand and the cost of the product, but somewhere around $2,000, $2,500 dealer incentives happening right now. If you were looking at one of those two brands, and you were thinking, well, I might be buying the beginning of next year or something, you might want to consider buying before the end of this year, because especially like if you were planning on a grand design product and you were okay with getting a 2024 or 25, you were already going to get a pretty good deal on those products as mm-hmm. they're trying to put in 2026 units on lots. So
a big giant red bow looks great on an Alliance, like on the front of it, you know, tis the season, get the rebate.
The difficulties that the RV industry has been having up until this summer weren't really filtering down to benefits to consumers. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of cracks in the armor, and we've seen pricing start to improve. Over the prices never really drop. I mean, that's why inflation is what it is. When they say a good inflation amount is 2%, that still means prices are going up, right? Mm-hmm. That still means the cost of everything goes up. But we're seeing more discounts, incentives, stuff like that. We're seeing dealers knock more off of prices, and that stuff is only beneficial to consumers, of course. So it's a little bit of that is happening right now. And I guess that's only good for people that are looking to buy right now.
Yeah. I mean, we have some friends who are interested in an Alliance. Maybe now's the time. I know you're listening. Now is the time.
All right. What's in your black tank this week?
So my black tank, I would like to speak to Morgan Stanley of Davenport
for
just a moment. You and I are going to talk.
Speaking of financial.
Yes. So tuck in Morgan Stanley of Davenport. I have a few things I'd like to discuss with you. So in front of our neighborhood, there's a new development going in, and they've broken ground on it, and we weren't quite sure what was going in there. It just said that the first floor was for lease and whatnot. And so the other day, I'm coming home down the main stretch of Davenport, and I need to take the left to go into our neighborhood, and, you know, it's a light, and traffic is quite congested here for some reason. You know, in front of this new development, we also have a couple of other businesses like a Starbucks, which can often be sometimes quite busy. And I'm thinking, oh boy, it's the afternoon rush at the Starbucks. And as I'm waiting to take the left, and I have to wait through one light and I have to wait through another light, and I realize the reason why I have to wait is because this two-lane road is being blocked by a bunch of cars. A bunch of cars are parked in the street to go into our neighborhood, and no one can come in because all of the people waiting to take a left to come out of our neighborhood are all in their lane. And the lane to go into our neighborhood is blocked by rows and rows and rows of cars. And I happen to notice that over in this new area where the ground has been broken, that there are dozens and dozens of people, and there are a bunch of shovels that are lined up in the ground, stuck in there with some hard hats on them. And there's a bunch of dudes standing around all like patting themselves on the back. And I realize really quickly that we're having a groundbreaking ceremony in which I guess everyone at Morgan Stanley decided to attend and decided to park wherever they wanted to park. So not only had they blocked the road for quite a long distance trying to get into our neighborhood, they had filled up the parking lot of businesses in and around that area so that no one going to the business could actually get into the parking lot. And they had backed up traffic on the main roadway, which is around the time that we're starting to look at the 4 o'clock people getting off of work. And this is a really, really busy stretch.
It's the busy roadway. It's the roadway that's got the, you know, it's the movie theater. It's the Costco.
Costco is but half a mile.
Walmart,
we're already backed up from Costco.
In our neighborhood, hundreds and hundreds of townhomes has but two entrances and exits.
Right. And only one of them you can take a left from.
Right.
And this is the one. Cars were backed up. Also, a bunch of people could pat themselves on the back that they were going to be taking the upper floors of this new development.
They're leasing them. They don't even own the building. I think groundbreakings are so dumb in the first place.
People were so mad. Like the amount of people, and it was happening as about the time that it was starting to break up a little bit and people were starting to walk to their cars from having just had this grand groundbreaking ceremony, and they were getting so much hate from people in cars. Like, people were so furious. So
that's nothing like bankers in suits blocking traffic.
It's just Mercedes after Mercedes after Range Rover, and they're just parked everywhere.
Not that there's anything wrong if you own one of those vehicles.
No, it's
the aggregate of it all.
It just added to the sort of tone deafness.
I never understand the whole thing. We got first of all, you're just cosplaying like with your shovels and your hard hats. Why are you wearing a hard hat to break the ground?
Like, whatever.
What's going to fall on your head?
You know, the piece de resistance was when the school bus was trying to take the children home. Yeah. And they couldn't take the children home to the neighborhood because there was a ground. It was just so ridiculous. And also right there is a membership. Talking about memberships, there's like this membership car wash, like one of those like really bougie like ones where you buy like the monthly and then you can like, you know, they have an attendant that like stands there to scan you in. And like there's an attendant on duty like the whole time. And that place is always hopping. Like, it is so busy at this car wash. So you not only have like all of these cars like parked and I'm not kidding when I say to you, they were parked and completely blocking the road to get into our neighborhood, to get to the car wash, to get to Starbucks. We couldn't get in until everyone trying to take the left to get out of the neighborhood had cleared. And then we could start taking our rights or our lefts to get into. It was an absolute cluster F. And I just was like, this has been days now, and I am still pissed.
It's a groundbreaking for essentially like it's like a four storefront strip mall. That's probably the best thing I could describe it. And Morgan Stanley's going to have this second floor as a lease. Why do we even have a groundbreaking for something like this?
But if this isn't in any indication, they're going to be great neighbors. Can't wait.
They didn't do a groundbreaking for the Panda Express.
Burn Boot Camp didn't get their groundbreaking.
Oh, like, my gosh.
The smoothie place that's coming in didn't have a groundbreaking.
All right. What's in your fresh tank?
My fresh tank goes to you because just a couple of days ago, we celebrated your birthday. So I want to say it here officially. November 6th was Jason's birthday. So a very, very happy birthday to you.
A wonderful birthday week. Thanks to you and the boys. And we had a great time in Chicago afterwards. And I just want to also thank everybody who commented on all the Facebook posts and everything. It was very kind to hear from everybody on my birthday. It made it really special.
It was such a nice day. It was very low key. Like just you made chili.
Yeah.
You wanted to cook.
I always like to make chili, but like I've been unhappy the last couple times.
Unhappy chili, man.
Somehow it's just drifted. So this year though, not only did I make chili, I made my own chili powder.
Yeah, that chili was really good.
It worked out well.
It was a chili with no beans because Ethan doesn't like beans.
Yeah, I would have put beans in it still, but it didn't need it. It was fine.
It didn't need it. But it was very nice, low-key day. You had worked kind of overtime Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in order to be able to take Thursday off. And then obviously we're working Saturday night in order to have had Friday off. So it was really nice to be able to just be at home and be kind of like domestic and not, you know, we didn't have any big things planned. I think it really just spoke to like what you were really needing and wanting for your birthday, which was just to stay home with your family.
Watched some football. We played some video games.
Yeah, I baked a cake.
You made a really great cake.
It was pretty
darn good.
Chocolate
cherry cake.
Oh, I did. It was.
Do you have more?
We do.
Okay.
That's what we're doing when we get home. That's dinner tonight. Like there are slices. So I made a chocolate cherry cake with a chocolate buttercream frosting.
Yes, and you were gracious enough to not go gluten-free with me.
I did not make it gluten-free. It was all the gluten. It was all the dairy. Yeah. It was all the things. So we do have some slices of it left at home, and it's worth the gluten.
Well, on that note, we got to get to that. So that's it for this week's episode of the RV Miles podcast.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much for joining us on the RV Miles nightly news. We had such a good time sitting down and talking to all of you. So if you have any comments for Jason or I, please feel free to leave them. If you're watching this on YouTube, down in the comment section, or you can come over to the RV Miles Facebook group, talk to us there, send us an email. We really, really do love interacting with you all. So thank you so much. Until next week, friends, please stay safe. Watch those roads. They're probably going to be a little busy for the next couple weeks. And keep logging those RV miles.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.